H. Assel Moilanen, ongelmatonta organisaatiopsykologia. Podcastin tarjoilee henkilöarvioinnin erikoisyritys Asselmointi Oy.
Welcome to another delightfully cheeky episode of H. Assel Moilanen, in the podcast that serves wisdom with a pinch of joy. Today's topic is Risk Culture Eats Pieces of Shit Like Management for Breakfast with the one and only Joe Miao. In this episode, we're diving into the captivating world of risk culture with Joe, where conventional management practices might just meet their match. Buckle up for a roller coaster of insights and, of course, sprinkle of the unexpected. Hey, good to have you here, Joe.
Thanks for having me, yeah.
Absolutely. Good to have you here as well, Juho.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me as well.
Absolutely. I'm dragging you along in the car, so you always come along.
I got to drive today, by the way.
Exactly. That was very scary.
For a little bit when Matti had to write some emails. And after that, he kind of took possession of the car again.
Yes.
Made a risk-based decision.
Absolutely. That was risk culture.
For the first 15 minutes, he was very worried about my driving.
Exactly.
And after that, he was only slightly worried.
Exactly. Now I'm very worried again. Okay. Good to have you here, Joe. Can you shortly tell who you are and what is this risk management?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Joe. I'm a psychologist based here in Australia. I work in a space called risk culture.
Yep.
I think the way I would put it is we focus on kind of people's behaviors and mindsets, and we try and assess that. That's what we mean when we talk about culture, sort of, you know, what people are used to doing in their day-to-day, in their work in particular. And then it's sort of like a risk lens attached on top of that. So because how people behave, how people think, it sort of just affects all aspects of anything. We try and limit it down a little bit so that we can actually make some judgment calls. So it's risk culture because we focus on how that impacts management of risk in an organization.
So you work in a bank. Is running with scissors really that dangerous?
I think banks is probably where risk culture probably has the most impact, I would say, because when I think about the work I do, yes, it affects our organization, but I think, you know, everyone interacts with the bank. All the stories that I hear at work, you know,
Yeah. It's
not actually just our organization and, you know, what happens. It actually is, you know, if I go to the ATM and I can't get my money, you know, that could be actually a really challenging situation, especially for some more vulnerable people in society in particular. Yep.
So what do you do, like, day-to-day business? Do you advise the managers or do you advise the businesses or do you try to pinpoint the risks or the pain points or what does it look like?
Yeah, so in my role specifically, so how risk culture works, I think, is we're seeing more and more it's something mandated by financial regulators Okay. Across the world.
Yeah.
So then for me, I actually work specifically in the risk culture within an audit function in the bank. So in a sense, I'm not meant to go and tell people what to do because Okay. When you're doing an audit, if you tell people what to do and then you come back and audit it again, you Yeah. Kind of want to say like, oh, good job doing what I told you to do. Good Yeah. Job, you know. Yeah. You can't stay sort of independent and objective. So what I do is sort of assess culture of Okay. The different parts of the organization and sort of make a judgment on how that then impacts how all sorts of different risks are managed within the bank. And I do that by really a lot of my job is just talking to lots of people, so lots of interviews and focus groups.
Okay.
Yeah, good. Well, when I learned that the topic of this episode would be with risk culture, my immediate thoughts were that I tend to personally associate risk with reward. And usually, in my experience, the higher the risk, the higher the potential reward also is. And this was something that kind of led me to leave my corporate job, that there was kind of no higher reward to strive for because all risk-taking was frowned upon.
Yeah.
So is there a way to avoid unnecessary risk but also reap kind of great short-term rewards, or is the only answer to kind of be careful and avoid the risk and kind of play the long-term game?
Yes, I guess in my world, what they often talk about is everyone has their risk appetite.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like a defined level of how much risk you really want to take. And, you know, there are banks that are riskier. You might have
bankers
to do that.
That
are riskier. Yeah.
We'd like to sort of have one of those bankers here. The ones that like the risk.
So it's really not necessarily eliminating risk, but making sure that you're making, maybe it's almost like taking rational risk. Like you know what risks you're taking on board and why that makes sense. Even if it's a lot, at least, you know, there's some governance around it. You know why it's happening.
Yeah.
To me, it looks like Australians really want to avoid risks and people in Australia hate risks. That's the sort of national characteristics I have in mind. Like if you go anywhere, like we can see, we're in a library at the moment in Sydney and there's all kinds of signs here. Don't crash the walls and don't sort of do this and that and the third.
Don't move the chairs.
Don't remove the chairs. It's very risky. Okay. But sort of most of the time, if the risk is big enough and maybe the accident already has happened, I think that government calls in a royal commission. That's a royal commission in Australia. There's nothing royal in Australia, but there's a royal commission. Like they don't have a king or a queen. And a couple of
We're
years
We're still ago, a Commonwealth country.
Absolutely.
Come on.
Regards to
theory, they have one.
Yeah, regards to King Charles, probably listener of the show.
His Majesty.
King Charles. King. Yeah. Well, anyhow, a couple of years ago, I remember there was the mail boss who gave expensive watches to the mailmen and male women.
Yes.
And then there was the Royal Commission for the bankers, the naughty bankers, they told them, or they called them because somebody embezzled money from the banks.
Mm.
And now sort of it's very difficult to withdraw your money from your own bank account and everything is made sort of very difficult and there's a lot of sort of security steps and so forth. So maybe first question, Joe, are you part of the Royal Commission?
No, that's before I even got into this whole risk culture world.
Joe probably is, but he doesn't want to admit it because
he wouldn't be able to tell us.
Exactly. Well, can you tell us more about the naughty bankers to sort of us Finns? It sounds like a stripper group. Do you have any knowledge of this? Is there any strippers involved or what's the story behind the naughty bankers?
I used to get that a lot when I used to work at Manpower. People were saying, what sort of a role have you got? But anyway, in terms of the Royal Commission, there's probably been a few around the world. In Australia, it sort of just caught up to us a few years ago. And some of the big things were really selling services, products at customers who didn't really benefit from what they were getting.
So there was the subprime loan type of thing, what the Americans did?
Probably a little bit different because it's...
Selling insurance to old ladies type of thing.
Yeah, so sort of selling insurances that people probably never would have been able to claim on properly. So really just charging fees for no benefit to the customer.
Oh, exciting. And what did they do? Like this was about 7-8 years ago. So what happened after that?
There was, through the Royal Commission, it sort of identified a huge range of different findings in relation to sort of governance, culture. Remuneration was a big piece, particularly for sort of senior management executives. And so it was really a focus on how do we actually shift the mindset of these banks, not to so much be on making more and more money, but as, you know, really fundamental institutions in a modern society, how can they actually be beneficial to society?
Yeah.
I think if I were to summarize it, that's sort of where I would go. So a lot of the language we hear now is, you know, what's the customer impact of something?
And okay.
That's really what it's about.
And did it help? Like, do you see the change? Has it changed or is there still people out to get me and get my money without giving me any benefits?
Well, I think within where I work, they had specifically an additional prudential inquiry to make sure that sort of a lot of those recommendations coming out of the Royal Commission were actually being taken on board. So sort of an external company came in and signed off that we actually sort of managed to change the culture significantly, and they wrote all these really amazing positive comments about us. I can see that, but at the same time, you know, as much as often I think there's a lot of people up there who deal with these people who can put a lot of spin on it, yeah, and there's definitely been a lot of positive change, but it's an ongoing process, because as soon as you stop thinking about it, you stop trying to, you know, maintain that culture, things just start moving back.
Yeah.
People are naturally greedy, and potentially bankers especially so.
Bankers are bad, but the naughty bankers have turned good. That's good to hear.
As psychologists, we're interested in how humans behave and think and feel and so forth. So in this risk culture work, is there any interest or consideration on the human factor of things? Is that something you consider? So, for example, people making bad decisions or people being too stressed out and therefore behaving kind of suboptimally. Is there kind of a human factor element to this risk assessment that you do?
Yeah, I think maybe not so much in depth. Like when you're talking about human factors in terms of, you know, how stressed each person is.
Yeah.
We don't, like, it'd be weird for us to go in and, you know, run something like an anxiety scale on all the people. But that could be something that would actually, you know, if we had a theory.
That could affect, though, the behavior and consequently
definitely.
Increase the risks as well.
Definitely, yeah. So it's definitely something we consider, but often I think we probably look at it using more proxy measures. So something like turnover we would look at, and, you know, that's often related to those human factors we talk about.
Is there a correlation between turnover and the risk levels?
I think the complexity of culture, right, is that, you know, there's so many variables that it's really hard to narrow it down. So it would be true in some areas and less so in others. For example, somewhere like a call center, naturally you just have a higher level of turnover than somewhere else. So wherever you go and you assess culture, you need to take that context into account.
Is there like any general research on the topic, let's say academic papers, or does every organization have to kind of create its own truths around the topic? Is there kind of a general understanding of what constitutes a risk and how do they kind of come about, or is it more like
that? What I'm seeing a lot is, I guess, it's aligned to the expectation of the regulators.
Yeah.
So it's sort of whatever they tell the banks to do, you know, that's we try and at least meet that level.
Yeah.
And sometimes we try and go above and beyond where possible.
Yeah.
But I think it comes back to that whole risk appetite, right? That's going to be different for every bank. So even for a regulator, it's hard for them to just say, you know, this is the standard. It's not like, you know, when you talk about bank, often risk is related to financial risk. So, you know, you got to hold X amount of capital, liquidity, all those requirements.
Exactly.
But it's harder to do that with people and say, you know, you need people who are at this level of risk-takingness. There's so many variables, so it is a bit more of a, you know, sense-based judgment of does it feel like they're on the right track and trying to do the right thing.
Well, is there like a risk university? Like, can I study risk in university? Or like you were asking about the research, is there like a risk professor that we should meet? A risk culture professor?
There are actually, you know, academics who really focus on this topic area. So there's actually two Elizabeths in Australia who have done quite a bit of research.
Yeah. Maybe they're related to each other.
they wrote like a manual together on how do you actually assess risk culture.
Okay.
So what they look at is sort of just governance structures around the world. And then part of that finding is actually, you know, it's the culture even within, say, these boards that often create the positive or negative impact on sort of decisions that get made ultimately across these organizations.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have any awkward stories about risk culture or risk culture going wrong?
I think the Royal Commission is actually the ultimate story of risk culture going wrong. But I think,
So what do you mean by that? Like, did they do something weird in the Royal Commission themselves? Did they take bribes or something like that?
Oh, no, as in just all the stuff that they found of what people were doing. And, you know, I do hear stories of, you know, the challenges. Some of them you'll actually be able to see in that Royal Commission report of the sales pressure that people tend to be put under. So, you know, incentive remuneration is always a big component and how that then impacts culture. Because I think what I do see a lot is, you know, people act in a way that aligns to what they get rewarded for. Therefore, they kind of do whatever they're told to do that's going to get them paid the most.
H. Asselmoilainen podcastin mahdollistaa Asselmointi Oy. Asselmointi on 2020-luvun henkilöarviointiyritys. Ainoa asia, mitä teemme, ovat arvioinnit. Ne teemme kunnolla, mutta kivasti ja elämänmyönteisesti, ilman pönötystä.
Asselmoinnilla on 4 arvoa. Vahvuuspohjaisuus, olemme hysteerisen kiinnostuneita ehdokkaiden vahvuuksista. Kantaottavuus, suosittelemme ehdokkaita asteikolla, suositellaan tehtävään tai ei suositella tehtävään. Selkeä ja näppärä. Nopeus, teemme arvioinnit asiakkaan ja ehdokkaan aikataulujen mukaan. Keskimäärin arviointin valmis 3 vuorokaudessa tilauksesta. Viimeisenä elämänmyönteisyys. Tällaista rentoa meidän kanssa hommailu on, niin kuin täällä radiossakin kuulet.
Kaikki tiedot, hinnat, palvelut ja tilauslomakkeet löydät nettisivuiltamme asselmointi.fi. Mene sinne, emme tuhlaa aikaasi.
Can I change the topic a little bit?
You can do whatever. I don't know. Let's see.
I would be interested to kind of learn or hear more about your maybe personal ambitions or goals or aspirations. So is there something you're looking forward, kind of diving into in the future or learn more about or kind of maybe tuning your own job description to certain directions? So do you have any professional or other goals?
I think ambitions.
Yeah.
Wonderful question.
Yeah. It's a bit of a broad question, but it would be interesting to hear about. Where do you kind of personally want to develop or become more?
I think
experienced in.
My whole career has been a bit of serendipity. It's sort of just like wherever I've landed. I haven't necessarily, you know, I've worked actually in like career. Sort of career transition roles where I'm guiding other people to think about their careers. But to be honest with mine, I've sort of just gone with the flow of it and whatever's come up. But I think the sort of common themes that I'm seeing as I, you know, go into different roles is I am quite interested in people's motivations and behavior. Yeah. So when I think back to, you know, my previous roles, a lot of psychometric testing, it's the motivations and behaviors of individuals, you know, we're trying to quantify that and use that to make better decisions. Now it's sort of moving on to another way to scale that. So instead of putting numbers to people, working with more that qualitative side of all the other things that might not be so easy to put in a survey or really understand how that actually plays out for someone. So if we go back to psychometrics and personality, someone might be really anxious. How that actually plays out for two people might be quite different. So in my role, because it's more qualitative, I can go and talk to them, see how that plays out and talk about that experience with people. And I think, you know, coming back to the original question of where I want to go with my career, I think it's just being able to understand people's behavior more and more through different lenses and then also be able to influence that more and more in order, maybe not so much, like we're not actually meant to tell people what to do, but maybe who knows down the track where I end up, you know, you could look at some of the nudge units. They sort of might do some similar types of work, try and make bankers less naughty somehow.
That's a difficult job. How did you land your job though?
I just did a job search of, you know, where psychologists might land. Okay, and there's not that many roles where they look specifically for organizational psychologists. And this turns out to be one of them where I'm seeing more and more people move into this sort of a field.
I don't think any of the Finnish banks have organizational psychologists, at least working on RICS. They might have some on recruitment. But
in RICS culture.
Yeah.
I don't think they even know what that means.
Probably not. Well, they have RICS.
the department, but not okay. risk culture, maybe. Yes. Do they talk about it at all in Finland? Have you heard about it?
Not a lot. Like, obviously, there's a risk that if you like fraud, risk of fraud, for example, mm. and they ask sort of where's your money from, and are you laundering somebody's money, or do you
and that
know
also
somebody?
Comes from the regulators.
Yeah, mm. regulators. Yeah. And sort of are you connected with the Russian politics or whatever, and they ask you types of questions like that. But I don't know what's happening within the banks. Like, is there a person like you poking at people in the stomach and saying, are you eating enough salads and are you doing the right thing?
Yep.
Which obviously...
no one's asking how many salads I've eaten.
Not you, but you have to look at the bankers. If they eat bad food, they become they become bigger.
I'm known for eating quite a lot of McDonald's, so...
You are, that's right. Yeah. I don't think... Do you consider that as a risk, sort of... cardiovascular risk.
I do monitor it from time to time. So, yeah. Okay. The important thing is that you make sure you keep track of it.
Do you need to be a psychologist to be any good at risk culture?
Does it help?
I think the skill set you bring as a psychologist tends to help because it is often research heavy. There's a lot of biases that can come in. I would say it's quite similar to conducting any sort of qualitative research. Mm-hmm. So you could be like a marketing professional, there's probably a lot of trends, sort of skills that transition well from that. Mm-hmm. There's a lawyer in our team who's done a lot of interviewing.
Yeah.
But what he's reflected on is that as a lawyer, you often have a agenda of what person you're interviewing, what you want them to be saying, the story you want them to tell. Whereas we go in a lot more open to try and, you know, bring out their experience rather than putting our overlay on them. So wouldn't say you have to be, but I think the skill set works really well. Yeah. So one of the challenges actually in my role is I've put it in my development plan of evangelize risk culture.
Yeah.
It's actually make it exciting for other people, particularly within our department. And it's not, people don't naturally think that way. Because I think when you present people with quantitative data, it's very clear and objective generally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of the interpretation of that can be subjective. But because they're so used to working with that sort of data, when you talk about qualitative research, and it's often hard to say, you know, even when you're doing sample sizes, you know, you're not looking at just how valid is something, you're often looking for saturations. So people saying the same thing. So you've actually captured, you know, all the different things that people connect with the culture in that space, but you can't actually be certain how prevalent those things are just from running focus groups and interviews. So those are some of the challenges as well.
Not an easy task sort of to make risk culture exciting because it sounds like it's another obstacle or more red tape and another thing you have to think about. What's your key performance indicators or what's your KPIs?
For me, I guess because we're an audit function, we have like a plan of, you know,
the
X number of
cons that
almost
you catch.
Like projects that we do. That's one of the challenges.
That's
right?
What I think. Like the naughty bankers that you have sort of caught. That should be your KPI.
But I think you know, let's take that as an example, right? If you're trying to set your culture of the audit function as how many bad things can you catch, you end up with an audit function that has really terrible relationships with anybody that you work with because they know you're just there to try and catch them out rather than like how I would articulate, you know, the point of the function is actually try and monitor and get into things early and keep the business management informed so that it doesn't end up with the regulator, which is then when you're in big trouble and you get fines, reputational risk, all of that. So it's, you don't necessarily want to be incentivized to catch problems because then you almost want to look for things that might not necessarily be there. Yeah, like it's like doing research, right? Yeah. You know, you always want to have that finding, but if that's your incentive, it can drive you to, you know, muck around with the data and try and get that P less than 0.05.
Absolutely. I'm sorry, Joe. That's why I'm not the risk culture man, and you are. Sorry, but you were telling about your KPIs. So how do you measure success in your work?
Yeah, so it's there's a plan and there's sort of X number of audits that you deliver.
Yep.
So we sort of just, I wouldn't say it's a perfect KPI because, you know, quality could be up or down. It's hard to say. But I think in this space in general, it's just quite hard to, KPIs tend to be more quantitative.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
And it's hard to come up with more quantitative metrics.
So are you, as a function, actually more closer to kind of internal audit than the risk management as such?
So we actually also have a risk culture team in the risk function.
Okay.
Yeah. But how it works is that they're allowed to do a lot more of the advisory and work with the business.
Yeah.
They're slightly less independent.
So do you inform them or exchange with them in any way?
Yeah, we still sort of work together on things and, you know, our findings we share with each other to try and build an idea of, you know, it's not possible for me to go and run focus groups interviews with all 50,000 people in the organization. So, you know, some of what they find might help us target, or we should look at these areas and take more of a, you know, where are the risky areas and therefore we should go spend more time there and then just sort of assume other places are doing okay.
If we think about the risk culture concept from the point of view of an individual, let's say line manager or team leader, it can sound very high level or abstract. Do you have any kind of anything that would be useful for them, let's say pragmatic tools or ways of thinking that would be useful for, let's say, an individual manager working in a branch office somewhere?
Yeah. I think consistently the challenges that I see, and often it's, you know, it's culture more general. It's not necessarily just risk culture.
Yeah.
And it's, I think I find a lot of managers have difficulty in being able to articulate quite clearly what is their expectation.
Yeah.
And then being able to stick to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that then, because they ultimately control people's performance, you know, we just talked about KPIs. They can sway things one way or the other, or they can just be all over the place and create lots of inconsistency. So people don't know what they're meant to be doing. Because I think ultimately, if people are clear on kind of what is the intended outcome of their role, what are they actually meant to achieve? You can get better at actually measuring, are people doing the right thing above and beyond just the outcomes that they land at? And I think that's really important when it comes to culture and risk culture, because it reduces the amount of kind of luck in the equation. So what I mean by that is, you know, if you just reward people for the outcomes, if you're doing, you know, that assessment on a yearly basis, sometimes people just have a good year or a bad year. But if you can actually sort of look at that process as well and see that some people are actually, you know, doing all the right things, but it just hasn't worked out for whatever reason, you know, over a 3-year period, you know, maybe their performance will actually outpace the person who got lucky that year. So it really helps drive people to do, to behave in a better way and create value more long-term rather than just push really hard for whatever's going to get them over the line the next time their performance gets assessed.
I think there's still some people out there listening who are thinking sort of, what the hell is this risk culture? So what's what's your sort of a short definition of risk culture?
I think, you know, when you talk about culture, so how I went about this is actually I just went and Googled culture and what actually comes up. And you see it's often some of the common words are around behaviors and attitudes, mindset. So it's sort of risk culture is all of the things that impact how you think about, in particular, maybe let's say the decisions that you make and therefore what are some of the normal behaviors you see and how does that impact risk management? So you might have an area where it's normal to actually deviate from what's written in process or policy.
Mm. Yeah.
And that might be part of the culture of, hey, we write these things down, but it's really just sort of a murky guideline. You don't have to follow it.
Yeah.
Whereas somewhere else, you know, they might actually tick every box all the way through the policy.
Yeah.
And if they encounter a situation that doesn't align with what's written there, they just have no idea what to do. So
are there any kind of, or Matti, do you want to share your findings with your friend?
No,
you go electronic ahead. Friends. Because I was thinking, obviously there are kind of these cultural dimensions that can vary between organizations. So I was wondering, I'm not an expert on the topic. I'm probably getting this wrong and using the wrong words, as one of our friends said. But I was wondering whether there are certain cultural dimensions that also kind of bring maybe some increased risk with them. For example, one dimension is whether the culture is kind of individualistic or collective. And you could have a hypothesis that in a very individualistic culture, people might optimize their kind of own benefit, and that could lead to taking some unnecessary risk from the point of view of the whole collective. Or let's say another cultural dimension could be that whether you're being very conservative or innovative. And you could say if you're really high on innovation and encouraging people to come up with new solutions, you might also fail a lot.
Mm.
Yeah. and make big mistakes in the process of innovating things. So do these kind of cultural dimensions come into play in any way?
Yeah, definitely. So like what you've talked about there, individualism, collectivism.
Yeah.
I think that's probably more the focus of general culture research, I find.
Yeah.
And, you know, lots of people have their own models, some of them because having your own model and selling it makes you good money.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, good business. We're very interested in hearing about models.
And how we can make money.
Yeah.
But I find that in risk culture, they look at it from a different lens of what are the types of behaviors they expect, and then also from a more systems, process, policy perspective, how do those things impact the culture as well?
Yeah.
Because ultimately, I think, you know, what you do write down is also a part of that culture and impacts how people behave.
Yeah.
So, like, if you look at some of the guides online written by even, say, regulators, you know, the Netherlands, Amsterdam, DNB put out like a guide to what they look at in terms of risk culture.
Yeah.
They actually look for things like, you know, people constructively challenging each other. That's really big.
Yeah.
They look at, you know, how the group dynamics operate, leadership, you know, whether there are feedback loops, and we don't just focus on what we want to achieve, but why we want to achieve, and people actually reassessing that regularly.
Yeah.
So there is probably a bit more of a framework and structure of, you know, these are the types of behaviors that we expect to see rather than sort of those spectrums you talked about, you know, more individualistic or collectivistic.
Yeah.
Because I think, once again, it's sort of like that's almost like the personality of this culture of what people tend to be.
Yeah. It's the same thing for organizations, but personality is for individuals.
But how that plays out can be quite different. So I think that's why they've gone for the behavior approach, so that it's a bit clearer on what they expect from people.
Yeah. You could join forces with your friend John Chang, who talks about burnout. You could be assessing the risk culture, and he could be assessing the burnout, and then you could sort of bring all these things together to the management and see sort of how things could be done in an even better way.
Mm.
You can go and monitorize that idea with John Chang.
I have a chat with John.
You'll have a chat. Call John and he'll tell you about
it. Get him to a barbecue for me.
Absolutely. Texas barbecue. Yeah, my friend ChatGPT tells that risk culture is the collective mindset and behaviors within an organization regarding how it identifies, assesses, and manages risks. Does that sound valid?
That's a probably much clearer definition than what I described, yeah.
Yeah, that's he's good in these things. ChatGPT. Anything, Joe, that you wanted to tell about our listeners, but we didn't ask you about risk culture, McDonald's, or living in Sydney, or about yourself, or anything else?
I think I am just, you know, I think risk culture is something that I feel like is going to be more and more important in the future. Mm. So something that I am seeing probably at more of a societal level, you know, there's more and more change. You know, you just showed me ChatGPT and AI is very topical at the moment.
Absolutely.
So I think one of the challenges with, you know, in an organization, how they normally talk about risk, they talk about your risks and controls. So you know what your risks are and therefore you put these controls in place to try and manage, monitor, whatever have you, control these risks.
Yeah.
The problem with that is when you have things like AI and even things like ESG, so environment, social, government, and sort of these upcoming risks that are harder to predict in advance of, you know, what things are going to come up, new regulations, big changes. If you take the traditional approach, it can be really hard to actually keep your risks under control. Mm. But from a risk culture lens, I think it's much more forward thinking because you're almost empowering your people to understand, you know, as an organization, this is how we think about risk. Go and try and make good decisions. You're not going to get it right all the time, and we're going to put these things in place to support you. But it allows people to actually be a bit more proactive rather than just going back to, oh, you didn't write a policies for it, so therefore I've gone and done this. But people to actually think about, is that something I should do? And I think that's the essence of why I think risk culture is going to be more and more important as, you know, we move in that direction and things change faster and faster.
Can you do that? Can you do that as a service? Like, can you just put up a service company, like a consultancy company that does what you do within the bank, like these risk audits? And is there an industry like that already?
Big Four's all got their like behavioral risk, risk culture teams. Yeah. Mm. So definitely you can. But I think the difficulty and maybe like the hesitancy if I were that decision maker to hire these people is assessing the culture is one thing.
Yep.
Changing it is really difficult. So even if you are having all these recommendations, even if your recommendation is moving the dial in the right direction, something else could happen somewhere else in the organization you have no control over that, you know, brings it right back.
Yeah.
So things like, you know, IT systems are being updated. You know, you might put a new policy that really, you know, moves risk culture in the right way, but because there's a new system, it's suddenly obsolete.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that are actually just outside people's control when it comes to culture change. So what it actually takes is a culture of people continually thinking about it, monitoring it, taking action and moving in the right direction, despite all of the setbacks that come along the way. And I think that's why it's really difficult. You can't just say, traditionally, I guess in consulting, they might say, make these changes, your business is going to be better.
Yeah.
They're going to say
these
things.
Make more money. Yeah.
It's much harder to say that with any sense of credibility when it comes to culture because I think it's just so much more difficult.
Who owns risk culture? Is it the management or is it the employee or is it the top management? Is it the board? Who owns risk culture?
I think it's two places. It is top management, so board and your executive committee. Yeah. Ultimately, as a leader, you have the most influence over it.
Yep.
But each individual person also needs to take accountability. And you can't say just, I sold that to that customer because the CEO told me to. You know, you also made that decision and you have to take accountability for that. So there's a lot of ethics that come into play when it comes to these things. You know, back when you talk about that Royal Commission, you know, it's often just actually thinking, is this actually going to be helpful and useful for the person I'm selling it to? That should be like a very basic ethical question, but you just often forget when the culture doesn't make you think about those things. So it's the leadership's responsibility to try and continue to drive that, but also your individual responsibility to make the right decisions.
Exactly. And that's why risk culture eats pieces of shit like management for breakfast.
Exactly.
Exactly. Cool. Hey, thank you, Joe. Thank you, Juho.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, and thanks for bringing us to a lovely Sydney library. I hope the other library members aren't bothered by this podcast and us talking here.
We are actually in a really nice room, and we wouldn't have had access to it without Joe.
And we had to kick some people out to do this as well.
So. Too bad for them.
And we took their scissors away, so no risk there. Cool. Thanks, hey, guys. Thanks for coming, and sort of enjoy your work and good job, and make sure that we don't see the Royal Commission in your bank again.
Hope not. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.